You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I think the presence of white supremacy on the campus is kind of a global trend. I have a feeling that these wonderful young men have been looking online and have been on online forums and learning about how they manage to reposition themselves as the victim, because that's what they're doing here, where they put things out there, people say, take it down, they go, free speech, and then they kind of start this big discussion where instead of it being about their racist views, it's about their ability to speak, and they shift the conversation and they make themselves the victims despite their hate messaging. And it's heartbreaking for me to know that I'm coming home to a campus where people, like what the hell's going on that people can put this up? And we kind of just go, oh yeah, it's just a sticker. Like, I don't want to come home to that.
So in terms of, you know, what led you to write this piece or to have a response?
I study universities. It's I work in them and I study them. And when I saw Professor McCutcheon's response, I realized that it was like the perfect example of what universities do so that they don't really have to take a stand. So they're able to point to an equity policy and say, we care about our racialized students, but also not isolate another potential community of recruitment, which is white males who might think that their freedom of speech is being attacked. And so what motivated me was I've worked in the University of Auckland for 10 years before coming to Canada. I ran the Tohokana Arts Program. And all I could think about is like our Māori and Pasifika students and how heartbreaking it is to attend an institution, be told that you're valued, but then have the head of the institution say, but we don't value you that much. For me, that was my motivation, was thinking about my community back home and that they shouldn't go to university. You shouldn't have to, it's bad enough we have to deal with sort of an undercurrent of racism, but for it to be widely accepted as a free speech option, that's not okay. We're not there anymore. We've moved on from that. So why are we, like, we've moved on from that terrible haka that the engineering students used to do. So why are we sort of regressing in that space?
I want to come back to that sort of shifting the conversation, because that's what you kind of break down in the piece. But the piece itself is titled When Actions Speak Volumes on Values. And just touching on what you said about students and feeling valued or not feeling valued, because, I mean, this is probably not the only instance that this kind of non-valuing occurs, right?
Yeah, so one of the things that we sort of talk about in the higher ed space is something called desirable diversity. So as long as Māori and Pasifika are happy to be on promotional booklets, to smile, when we do, like, cultural week, when we're playing sports for the university, when we're willing to be on websites and billboards, as long as we're willing to do that, we're accepted and we're valued. The moment we say we're not happy with how you're responding to something is the moment we're no longer desirable and we have to be shut down. And I think I was really happy to see a response from a lot of Pasifika alumni where they were emailing Stuart McCutcheon and saying, take me off your marketing. I don't want to be on it anymore. And I have a feeling that that was probably more powerful than just saying, do something. Instead saying, we're not happy to be your desirable diversity anymore. We don't want to be your window dressing. Stop putting me on your posters. I think that that is quite powerful because that's what the university values about us. It's this diversity that makes them look good without having to actually do a lot.
And that's actually something that happened after. So when McCutcheon made the initial comments about this being an it was unfortunate, right, that these posters were there. There were a number of students actually, they initiated their own protest movement, essentially, in a little kind of occupation in the quad where they stayed for a number of days and led to a sit-in in the clock tower. And all of that even it led to another email or another sort of justification perhaps by McCutcheon, where he sent another email clarifying his ideas. Did you get that?
I'm not a staff member yet, so right. I didn't officially get it, but I work with enough staff members to receive it.
So what did you think of it?
I think beyond the like the main problems with, you know, he doesn't apologize. He's clarifying his position. I think what worried me about that I hope that the, like quite a lot of the academics signed that open letter. I hope they realize that that has to be followed with action. And one of the really important lines in McCutcheon's email was that this seems like a hot button thing for Senate to discuss. And we have to be aware that the Senate body can put out a statement on where the university stands on freedom of speech. And so we have to watch the Senate agenda. And if this comes up on the agenda, we have to make sure that those of us who are allowed to be present are present. And we say, this is not a discussion. Like, or let's have an academic debate and talk about the pros and cons, not just listen to people who are saying that freedom of speech is their right. Because in New Zealand, it's tied to the Human Rights Act, which is tied to, like, it's an anti-discrimination point. And so we really need to make sure that, I think, reading between the lines on his response, that we don't let the University of Auckland create a position where this is allowed to happen because it's seen as a freedom of speech issue or an academic freedom issue. Beyond that, I think he was enough pressure had happened publicly in very public ways. I'm grateful to the media for constantly covering it, that he had to say something. Mm. But it was empty.
Right. And that, and so that emptiness, let's, I guess, go back to the shifting of the conversation and him, again, that clarifying his position. You know, what? Why is it that the conversation then always goes to freedom of speech rather than the impact or the hurt that is caused by that speech?
I think that kind of comes back to the idea of, like, majority rules, right? So people who talk about freedom of speech are usually people who feel like they're rights to be hateful are being taken away from them. I very rarely see, like, racialized bodies talking about their freedom of speech, and that's because we're concerned about our freedom to live. We're concerned about our freedom to have access to healthcare and to good shelter and to education. We don't feel like anything in this current system is being taken away from us. I understand that a lot of white males feel like they're not getting what they were promised, and it's a lot easier to blame Indigenous, minorities, migrants, than it is to blame a huge system and to take on that huge system. It's much easier to blame small communities. I think that that's part of the discussion we have to have with these people is, let's look at the bigger issue here. It's not actually that, first of all, it was never your land, but it's not actually about what you feel you're losing out on is not because of brown bodies. Like, it's not migration. It's not Indigenous rights that's taking away what you feel you're owed or what you feel you have a right to. It's deeply tied to white privilege, I think. And Stuart McCutcheon is, his email and his response, I think, speaks to white privilege. This idea that, like, it's a freedom of speech issue for him. It's not actually a safety issue for him. It's not, I don't know if he's, maybe he's never felt like his very existence is in question. And that's what the stickers do. They question our existence as Pacifica, as Māori. And so he's never felt that. And then for him, it's about, oh, everyone has a right to an opinion. And it's not.
And that's, I mean, what this piece kind of shows, right, is that McCutcheon or other advocates for, quote, freedom of speech don't actually necessarily understand freedom of speech.
No, they don't. And I think that's also why I wanted, like, I visited their website because I was like, I'm going to find out what the hell they're talking about. And I'm going to find out where their assumptions came from. And as soon as they started talking about freedom of speech and who's trying to shut down their freedom of speech, and then they pointed to the Bill of Rights, I was like, okay, I feel like you haven't read it, because nowhere in there do we talk about freedom of speech. That's why I kind of indicate that I think they've been talking to North Americans online. We have freedom of expression, but that's tied to freedom from discrimination. And I, you know, it's my job to read things and to analyze things, and I think that what's happened here is they've picked the pieces they like, and they're using it in a way that's convenient for them, as opposed to looking at the whole piece. And I think what's scary about their website is that they're very articulate, but you have to dig a little bit further and then you find out that they're really, it's just a copy paste from the rest of the internet that's about white supremacy.
So in terms of responding to this issue, and this is not, like you say, this has happened recently at the university, but I guess, you know, New Zealand was founded on white supremacy, essentially. And so this is not a new issue in that sense, right? But there is, at the moment, a focus on freedom of speech, or this apparent a lack of people's right to it, supposedly. So how do we make sure that we're having this conversation and keeping it in the right realm of that issue, rather than it going out and, you know, to who knows where, wee-wee-wah-wah?
I think I'm a big believer, if they want to sticker a university, then let's call them to account by our university's knowledge standards. Let's say to them, cool, come in and let's talk about it. And we want you to use peer-reviewed articles from actual journals, not journals that are funded by right-wing millionaires. We want you to use a logical argument. Just yelling freedom of speech does not work. We want you to understand the history of freedom of speech. We want you to understand the history of New Zealand, where it's not freedom of speech, it's freedom of expression and what that's tied to, and really calling them to account intellectually. Because if they want to do this in a university, that's what we do. We debate. Let's do this. Let's talk about this. As opposed to what they're doing is they're relying on sort of, I think, that knee-jerk reaction that happens a lot on the online sphere, where we kind of, it just turns into a screaming match. Don't get me wrong, I want to scream at them. But I've seen what happens, at least I've seen what happens in Canada when we scream at them. And one of the interesting things I've noticed about these New Zealand movements for freedom of speech is they're bringing in Canadians. And when I was looking at, when I look at the Canadian movement here, they rely on us wanting to scream at them, because then they get to play the victim. Whereas if we say, okay, let's have a measured discussion, they can't do it. Like they act like that's not the response that they're hoping for. And it kind of sucks. Historically, racialized bodies have had to be the ones that try to, I guess, calm the situation. We're not allowed, we don't have the privilege of being emotional because of all the sort of stereotypes tied to that. But it's one of these cases where if we do outrage, we're just doing what they want. Yeah, I do want to scream at them.
But that's like, if something interesting, I guess I saw in the sense that McCutcheon, or often, you know, universities or whoever is advocating for the Canadian speakers even who came to New Zealand, is like this idea that the university is a place for that academic reasoned debate. You know, we're supposed to have these discussions, but it's like those same standards are not applied to this group, because immediately they play the victim.
Which is exactly the problem. Is I'm all for academic freedom, but let's understand what academic freedom is. Academic freedom is about having expertise in an area and having an informed view. They do not have expertise in this area, and their views have been informed by problematic sources. And so if we're going to do the, we're a university and, you know, we're a place of different ideas, then the same way that the Kaupapa Māori movement, the same way the Pacific Research Methodologies movement, the same way we've had to prove over and over and over again that our knowledge is valid, let's hold them to the same account. It's taken us decades to prove to the universities that our knowledge systems are valid. Let's make these guys do the same thing. Like, hold them to the same standard you're holding us to, because it's a pretty rigorous standard. And we're managing to hold our own in this space. And so let's force them to do the same thing. Otherwise, what we're really saying is that we're a space to discuss multiple ideas, but different people are going to have different standards.
You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.